Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, conversations on the art of thread.
Jane Sanders, also known as Stitching in the Kitchen, has made a name for herself with her machine-embroidered, mixed-media pop portraits. I've been a fan of Jane from the moment she appeared, and her ability to capture the essence of her subjects, many of whom are famous and much loved around the world, is truly sublime. Jane's hippie-punk foundations underpin her artistic mindset, and among other things, we talk about the joy of communal art projects and the challenges of commissioned work. As with all Needle Exchanges, you can get up close and personal with Jane's art on our YouTube channel, and you'll find links to her website and socials in the show notes. Jane is a huge talent, and it feels like she's on the edge of global recognition. So remember where you heard her first. Enjoy the show. Are you no longer stitching in the kitchen?
No, I've moved house, but ironically, now I've got like the spare room that's like a cupboard, but it's actually bloody smaller than what I had before. Because when I was in the kitchen, I could like spread out over all the countertops and the kitchen table, and now I'm confined. So really, I've shot myself in the foot. But I still call myself stitching in the kitchen because it still represents, I think, the fact that you can make beautiful things, but you don't need this flash git white Instagram studio. You can still make it in a domestic setting, the corner of your bedroom, the cupboard room where I am now, wherever.
Is it because you're a punk?
I'm either a punk or a hippie. I'll let you decide which one.
Because it's interesting, isn't it? Because by saying stitching in the kitchen, I'm going to sound all serious all of a sudden, but in the kitchen, you're grounding yourself. You're going, do you know what? I'm not frou-frou ha-ha.
I know.
I'm keeping it real. And I feel like keeping it real is part of your thing.
I think it is because I hate pretension in art, and ultimately you're selling a luxury item in a recession. So it's like it really bugs me when people go on and on about abstract art and, you know, how you've got to understand it and, you know, this kind of like Brian Sewell type talk. really, if you're making something and you want to make a business out of selling it, it's got to look good on someone's wall. We can all go into the Tate Modern and see these like highly like theoretical pieces. Do you want it on your wall in the bedroom? No, you don't. So life's serious enough. You haven't got to like, you know, go around banging your head with a hammer, have you?
I love that you use that voice. I use that voice quite a lot myself.
Yeah.
It's a perfect one to talk. How are you?
Yes, I'm all right. I'm perpetually tired like every other person in this country. But no, I'm good. I'm excited about the work that I'm doing. Things seem to be ramping up. I'm getting more sales. I'm getting a few more works in exhibitions. Because despite doing this for 5 years, it's slow. The process and the progress of it is slow. Because I think ultimately I do pop art and it's hard for people to take pop art seriously.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got the double blow of doing pop art and then doing textile art.
Yeah. But I see that as good because really what you're always trying to do is create something that nobody has ever seen before. You're trying to make a unique item. So, I mean, I don't know how many people have seen like a sewn picture of Elton John. So, you know, in many ways you've got a unique item there. But, yeah. So
it's like a sort of Rage Against the Machine situation where you've got the industrial art complex and then you've got you.
Yes, I think so. And I think it's just hard to make a living out of art. And I think it's hard to get yourself seen anyway in life. But I'm getting there. I'm getting there.
Yeah, I feel like you are. Like I scrolled back through your Insta all the way back to 2016. And it was like the momentum's definitely there because what you've done three of your own shows?
I've done three solo shows in the Northeast, yeah. So they were the ones that I just did off my own back, right, bollocks to this, I'm just going to do an exhibition myself. And then a lot of that stuff sold. And then as I got more known, as I was doing a piece, thankfully, it would sell. So now for me to do a solo show, it's quite hard to build up stock because now I'm like financially reliant on it. I can't just say, oh, do you mind if I just keep this picture for like a whole year, you know, until this exhibition comes up. So I just sell as I go. And that's all right. I'm okay with that. And I like being in group shows and competitions are good when they come off. So yeah, so that's fine.
Let's go back to the start.
Let's go right back to the beginning.
Let's go right back. Right back. I always say that. There was a bright light and someone slapped me on the bum. I don't necessarily mean it quite that far. You did art and design training, art training.
Well, if we want to take it right back.
Right back, I do.
Right back. So I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
48.
Oh, you're a baby man. I'm 49. So, like, we're kids of the 70s. So in the 70s, like, handicrafts was, like, the thing to do. It was in my house as well, you know, growing up two girls. So no health and safety in the 70s, as you know. So my mum had a Singer sewing machine, and it used to be like a manual one that you wound with, you know, the spoolie thing. And then
she had one very strong arm.
Aye. And then she's got someone probably like my dad to strap a motor onto it, which is what people did to motorize these machines. And then she threaded it up and went, oh, I'll just leave you with that, Jane. You see what you can do with it. You know, like as if you would do that to a kid now. So that's when I like fell in love with sewing. And I found that I was able to like sew all different things and clothes and then like handicrafts as well. You learn all sorts of different weird kind of like skills that I think kids would be bored shitless by now because it's not computerized on a PlayStation. So that was always my background and we were always crafting and arty at home. So then spin forward a bit. So then I went to do my degree here in Newcastle where I live, where I trained as a painter. So I was doing like largely kind of portraity kind of pop art work, but I found that I was starting to incorporate stitching and sewing and mixed media and all of the skills that I'd learned way back in the 70s. So that was kind of my background into this. Then life gets in the way of what you want to do, doesn't it? So I found myself being a single parent, looking after like raising two girls on my own on a low income. So then art takes the back burner because that doesn't pay the bills and it doesn't look after your kids. So then I had a bit of a hiatus for a while. And then when the kids got older, I thought, right, I'm going back into this. What do you want to do? So I'd always been a mass music lover. Music had always been my friend throughout my entire life. And then like my love of sewing. And I thought, I'll stick the two together and I will sew my musical heroes. And that's how it started.
A legend was born.
A legend was born. It was an ordinary day like any other. And then I sewed Amy Winehouse. So
was Amy your first portrait?
Amy was the first one that I did. Check this. This is weird. So Amy was the first one that I stitched. And then I thought, I'll get into the narrative of these portraits. So because of her sort of the kind of persona, it's all, she was always quite, she always looked like she was on the brink of death, really, didn't she? So I used some like Mexican Day of the Dead fabric for her clothes because I thought that would just kind of add to the narrative. And she just died, you know. And then I just discovered Instagram almost at the same time. So I put on, and my very first follower was a woman in Texas. And we had a bit of back and forth because she loved Amy Winehouse. And then the very first sale I made, which was probably a year later of making work, was her. She bought the picture of Amy Winehouse. Amy Winehouse was the first, and the woman was my first follower. How freaky is that?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
That was a good sign.
Yeah.
How many other portraits you made by the time of your first sale?
Oh, gosh, probably about, I don't know, 15, something like that.
Okay.
Because you've got to show.
Did that really help validate you?
Yes, it did help validate me. I'm a sort of nutcase that I would do this even if I didn't sell any work. I'm like the sort of person that would make, I don't know, the Marie Celeste out of matchsticks in a shed. So I would just do it anyway. But yes, it did validate me because, you know, if you like something, you hope that somebody else will, don't you? And then obviously, if you can make a bit of cash along the way, all the better, because then you can pump it into the next picture.
I think I discovered you in 2017. I was looking, that was the first blog post we did. And I've still got a Not Safe for Work Saturday blog post that's got...
Oh, God, I know.
I'm going to say Marianne Faithfull's boobs.
No, it was Janis Joplin's boobs. And then it was...
Iggy Pop's schlong.
Iggy Pop's schlong. Yeah, I know. I know. But you know on Instagram, where I think at the end of the day, they show you like your most liked post. Well, that schlong was like the third most popular. I thought you dirty sods out there. But anyway.
We're so primitive, aren't we?
Yeah.
So let's talk about the technique for a bit. Because like looking back, like you came out hitting pretty hard on the portraits. Like your technique has evolved, I can tell.
Yeah.
But not evolved very far, as in you were already gunning for it from the start.
Yes, I was already gunning for it. But I think things that I wouldn't have approached then that I now have the skills to do now. And also, I suppose something that I've developed is like sewing with more unconventional materials. Because I think just because you say I'm a textile artist, it doesn't necessarily mean that I only sew with fabric. If I like to kind of like push that boundary of using mixed media and sewing with, oh, God, I mean, I've sewn with all sorts of things, cigarette cards, newspaper photos, just all sorts of stuff and added sort of, I would say, tat. No, like, you know, bits and bobs to my pictures that probably you wouldn't conventionally think of as textile art.
I tell you what we'll do for a second is we'll stop and we'll talk about that Gene Simmons piece and the amount of embellishment on his face mask.
Oh, no, like, don't talk about that because that's rubbish. That's way back when.
Is it? Yeah, but I mean, it's just really intense. Like, it's one of those things that you don't appreciate. And then I was looking at, I was just thinking the amount of embellishment put on that. I mean, you must have a sense of structural engineering, I think.
Well, I suppose I must do, yeah. I suppose I must do. I mean, the process that the way that I start pictures is I start with a sketch and the sketch is original. I don't work from photographs. I guess in the beginning I was because I was a bit naive about it. But now it's my own original portrait. And also I don't want to get done for copyright. Whack. I start with because I have got the drawing skills from doing my degree in portraiture. Start off with a drawing. And then I'll start to use that drawing religiously like a stencil. and I transpose some of the drawing onto material, and I'll just put on certain key lines of people's faces that I think define them, and then I just make the rest up as I go. And then I'll start to add shading with the threads. Then I add glass eyes, because I think if you add glass eyes, the piece just comes alive. And the great thing about using fabric on portraits is, like, I use felt because it's very, like, robust, and you can, comes in all sorts of colours, and it's very strong. You can do all sorts of things to it. It's almost like skin. It's kind of weird. I think once you start making a portrait in something 3D, like textile, it just seems to come more alive than doing a drawing or a painting. From then on, you start to build her hair up, and then the clothes is a great way to express yourself through different materials.
Yeah. And so you learnt portraiture at school? Because, yeah, when you look at your sketches, they're just like, I mean, those stand up just by themselves.
Oh, cheers. Get your wallet out then. Let's buy that. Yeah, I do. I love drawing. I do love drawing. But like I say, I'm trying to make this.
Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So, do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
But the thing that no one's ever seen, and everyone's seen a drawing, nobody's seen a stitched portrait. So,
because that's what's the thing that struck me as well, is that it's like your character building. I mean, your character building of people that people are aware of, but you're telling a version of them, aren't you?
And yeah, I'm trying to show them a different light. So who should we talk about? Say someone like Kate Bush. So everyone's seen Kate Bush. We all know what her face is like. But I want to show her in the way that I see her. And if I see her this way, other people will relate to it. So in my mind, if I think of Kate Bush, I think of, like, she's very mystical, she's very magical, and I think of her hair, like her crazy hair. And then I was starting to think about that phrase that they say about women where they say, oh, you've got bird's nest hair. So I thought, right, let's have this. And so I've sewn her face and I've sewn her hair going up, but then on the top I've created her a hat, I guess, and it's a bird's nest. So I made a bird's nest, with, like, kind of using the skills that I learned in the 70s, you know, when you would learn weaving or something like that. So I actually physically made her a bird's nest out of twigs that I just collected when I'm walking. And then it even has moss inside. And then it has, I think they're quail's eggs, the tiny little eggs that will fit within this bird's nest that I've, like, strengthened up. So whilst that's largely nest, it's still a textile piece because the basis of it is textile, and because I say it is. And then it's mounted on it's mounted on material, and then all of my work is box framed under glass because they're textile. I, you know, they would just collect dust, and they're quite delicate, really. So that's great. And then what was good, I really enjoyed doing the drawing for that. It was quite a powerful drawing that I could work off. So I managed to sell the picture off the drawing. You know, somebody reserved it just off the drawing, trusting that I would do a good job. So that's the sort of example of, like, trying to see somebody in a new light, in a different light.
And is it like an iterative thing? So when you make
Brian
thing,
Sewell.
I know, I should talk about it like this. When you make something, like, say you do a nice phrase or something, or you make something for someone, as part of the process, you can't help but reflect on the subject.
That's right.
So you've made Kate Bush and you've made her in that way. Yeah. By the time you've gone through and made the process, has your appreciation of Kate Bush changed?
I love Kate Bush anyway, but as I make the work, I tend to listen to the music of the artist that I'm sewing. Because I don't know why, but part of being a hippie punk is that I think somehow magically it sews into the fabric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But it's like there was someone, I can't remember who it was. Was it someone like Linda LaPlante, one of them crime writers, female crime writers? She said when she writes about the 1960s, she plays 1960s music because it seems to strengthen her writing, right? So if I'm doing like Robert Smith from The Cure, then all I'll play is The Cure as I'm doing it. And it just seems to inform the piece more. I think it does. It might not. But it's a good way of learning.
No, 100%. I think that makes sense because you're trying to do your version of an artist. And in order to do them justice, you've got to consume their art at the same time, right?
Yeah, that's right. Because there's only one piece of work where someone's asked me to do it. And I just couldn't frigging listen to the music because it was so awful. I'm not going to say who it was, but it was a rapper.
And that, bleep it out.
Yeah. I just thought, I just can't listen to this. And like, whilst she really loved the piece, I didn't think it was so successful because it didn't seem to have so much soul, in my opinion. Mm. But I'm sure she loved it.
Yeah.
Weird, isn't it?
That's interesting. And yeah, do you have a sense of responsibility, do you think, when you make a portrait of someone, even if that person's never going to see that portrait?
What do you mean, a sense of responsibility to who? The artist?
Maybe.
No. No, not at all. I don't have a responsibility to them. I just have to do the best piece of work that I can do. I've got a responsibility to myself not to muck it up because you're only as good as the last piece you did, aren't you?
Yeah. And does one piece come along and then you have to do that until it's done and then the next one comes?
Yeah, I don't
mix. Or do you have ideas floating?
No. It's like eggs. It's like producing eggs. So I'll be sewing a piece of work. So I might be doing Shane McGowan. And then just as I'm nearly finishing old Shane, I'll be thinking, oh, let's do Ian Dury. So it's like a constant flowing of things, of constant ideas. So just as one's finished, I'm popping another one in. Does that make sense? I don't have a time where I'm not thinking about it. I don't have a time where I haven't got the next idea. Imagine that. Imagine not having any ideas. God, that's scary, isn't it?
Just drop dead, wouldn't you, really?
What's the point? Yeah.
Do you have ones that stick out as being extremely pleasurable, Kate Bush notwithstanding?
Yeah.
Who are some of your faves?
Oh, God, my favourite, right, is the Paul McCartney piece. The biggest portrait I've ever done. I think Paul McCartney is a member of my family. He's not... he's not just, this is why I love doing musicians, because music is so important to people. It's like, if you love Keith Richards, maybe you love him more than your wife or something. People feel personally connected to musicians because music is personal and music stops people feeling lonely. And music, got to sound like Madonna, brings people together. But it's like, I really love fans. I love like fan culture and I love fan forums because I talk about the Nicky Wire piece in a minute with the Manic Street Preachers. I mean, that was an entire I'll talk about it now.
No, do it.
Right. So I love the Manic Street Preachers. Hello, I'm Jane and I love the Manic Street Preachers.
My name is.
And I'm obsessed with Nicky Wire and I loved it how when fans sent him things, he's good enough to like put them on his jackets or put them on his guitar strap. I thought, what a thrill that must be to like send him a badge and then you see it and he's on Top of the Pops and he's wearing it. You know, because like really music stars are kind of like you can't get anywhere near them, but he seems very like into his fans. So I thought, right, I'm going to make a massive life-size portrait of Nicky Wire, but with a black jacket, just a black jacket. And I'm going to go on the fan forums of Manix and I'm going to ask people, will they please make me something to sew on this jacket? It can only be, I don't know, say like 3-4 inches, no bigger than that. But if you want to sew it, I'm going to sew it on the jacket. So if you want to make it out of material fab or make me a badge or make me something. And I thought, if people do it, great. If not, I'll make them myself. And I was just got like this influx of people going, this is wonderful. I'm just going to... And like sending me tiny little cross-stitched Welsh dragons and photographs to sew on and badges that they'd made. And they're kind of like an arty band anyway, so I think the fans are arty. But not only, Jamie, did I get all of these things, I got like letters. So people were saying, you know, this band was so important to me because I played them at my wedding, my blah. And it's like they were giving you stories of like why the band was important to them. So that piece of work became like a collaboration between me and fans of Manic Street Preachers. So then when I sewed them all on, it was just this like visual phantasmagorica on his jacket. It was just wonderful. And then, so that was great. And anyone that helped me, I sent them something back as well. So it was a back and forward. And now that piece of work is in like the Tenby Art Gallery in their permanent collection with alongside the letters, which I think just showed like how important the letters were. And bloody moment of my life, Nicky Wire visited that gallery and got his picture taken next to my picture. So when I received this, I was just like, right, that's it. I might as well just give up now. I'm finished.
Done.
I'm done.
Yeah.
Because I used to have pictures of him on my bedroom wall. And now here's a picture of him with my picture, you know?
That's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done exhibitions in the past, like collaborative things, and people just, they love to tell you the stories, don't they?
Yes.
The minute you give them a good excuse, a good reason to share some work, then the stories come with it. And I mean, you just end up crying at times, don't you? You can't really help it. Such is the beauty of it all.
Oh, you old softy, you.
Do you know what? Only since I had kids, I used to be tough as nails.
Yeah, I bet you were. Really. Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I think music just is really, really important at this point because the world has gone mad. Politics is mad. Mm-hmm. People's finances are mad. And then I was watching this Rolling Stones thing the other day, and Keith Richards said like he felt that music was the only thing that people could trust now. So I think that's why it's so important.
I mean, I think, yeah, it's quite hard, isn't it, to sort of peel away, because I would still question if people can trust anything in which Cardi B is partnering up with the guy from Maroon 5 or whatever. Do you know what I mean? It's still like the engineered versions of
You don't, but you have the choice. You don't play Cardi B if you don't like Cardi B.
No, that's true. Yeah. And I mean, I love a bit of music. I think there's something about art when it's not like strongly commercial. Do you know what I mean? I think that's almost to the point we started off talking
about. I think so, you know, but people... yeah, I don't like music snobbery. If someone really loves Gary Barlow, you go for it because that talks to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? And who are we to judge necessarily?
Absolutely.
But I think what you've provided is a really nice way for people to express their passion for those things. Because you've got such a diverse range of portraits and pictures that you've done.
Yeah, there's all sorts, absolutely all sorts. I mean, I've gone from, like, I've got David Bowie. I think I've probably done about 3 or 4 portraits of him, which is great for me. And then on the other side, I mean, somebody asked me to do Rick Astley a while ago.
Oh, I saw that who's just like been opening on Glastonbury.
I know, it's gone cool. He's
suddenly gone cool. Job as well.
Who am I to say it's not cool anyway? And then, you know.
Some say it was when that portrait was made. That was what the tipping point was.
It's me. Oh, God.
I believe so.
I think so. And then, you know, I've got like, you know, reggae stars like Lee Scratch Perry. And then someone's just recently, I've done one of Maxi Jazz from Faithless. So, you know, I can bounce all over the place.
And then Lee Scratch Perry, was that a commission? It was something.
Was a commission originally. Yes, so that was great. So I sold her the original. So just to describe it, he is like a magpie. And whenever I read about him, or I remember seeing like documentaries about him in his studios, he just collects stuff like crystals, beads, everything. He is like a magpie. It's like he lives in a magpie's nest. Then he would suddenly go nuts and burn the whole lot down and then start again. He's absolutely crazy. On his hat, he had crystals that he believed that he could talk to other people with. I love people like that, that are just nuts. Mm. So I'm like, right, if I'm doing a portrait of him, I'm a hoarder as well, by the way. So I like going into my big bead box full of cracker toys and plastic bits and bobs and just stuff that I've collected over the years. And I'm just going to shove them all over his jacket. So it just is as crazy as I believe he is in a great way. So that portrait was made. And then it was good, actually, because it got used in a number of ways. So shortly after he died, there was an exhibition in New York solely about Lee Scratch Perry. So I sent a print over to them. I'll get onto something else in a minute. So I sent a print over to them, and it was obviously quite a well-known New York area because there was a picture of Susan Sarandon stood in front of it, which was, so I was a bit like, woo, Thelma and Louise. Then somebody used it in, it was like a sort of grime and bloody reggae show thing in Newcastle. They just had a print of it in the background. Then when there was a collection of his work, they asked on Spotify, could people send in portraits of him to go on the canvas of Spotify? So when you click on the song, your picture comes up and they slightly animate it. But I tell you what, it's really hard to make money in this business because I only got paid for the original. So like out of all of those things, so this is what I mean. This is what I think it's quite important to explain in the world of, I mean, it's largely, you know, the world's ruled by Instagram really, isn't it? Whilst I can look quite successful financially, it's a different kettle of fish. And you've got to be careful looking at people on Instagram in the white studio with the hair up, with the paintbrush stuck in it, looking thoughtful at their picture. It's like, what's actually really going on there? I think it's more important to just be real about it. So whilst I've got all that coverage, I didn't get paid by Spotify, didn't get paid by the gallery, didn't get paid by the grime show. So it's like you end up doing things for free. I mean, you're not paying me now, are you?
No, true. Buggers. Awkward silence.
Awkward.
One thing I observed, one thing I noticed about your Instagram is that you don't have as many followers as I think you should have. And what I think it sometimes boils down to is you don't do video particularly. And I think that, like, and it's, this is no reflection on you. This is a reflection on the algorithm and the way the game possibly changes. And I'm in the same boat because I don't want to do video.
You mean like
it doesn't
reels?
Make sense for me to do it. Yeah. Because I know other people who've been around for less time, but because they're doing reels all the time, showing their process, the algorithm loves that. So it just bangs you under people's noses a bit more. And I mean, that's something where, you know, like I was talking with Jack Roberts, JPR Stitch, who has got to the point where...
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Making videos of his process is part of his process. So it's almost like he's got things clamped right next to his sewing machine so that he can just choose to video at any point.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of documentary, but I feel like one of the reasons that he's got, because he's got over 50,000 followers on Instagram.
Get him.
And I think part of that, and this isn't doing him a disservice, but part of it is he's doing video all the time.
Possibly.
And he's playing the game that Instagram wants. And it's interesting to see because it's like, where do you start? You know, because we become beholden by those things. And it's like, I'm a really big fan of like email marketing because to me, that's permission marketing. That's people who want to hear from me.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that I focus on because just when you think that the, you know the score, then the algorithm changes or Instagram's business model changes. And then suddenly they're launching something to compete with Twitter and it'll turn it. If you're not doing your thing in a way that looks like it should be on Twitter, then you're going to lose out there. And you're just like, how are you supposed to do it?
You
are. How are you supposed to do it all and then still get on with making your art?
But let's be positive as well. Like, you know, being like an old bag, when I first started doing art, the internet didn't even exist. So, you know, so it is a lot easier now. Like talking about doing these like collaborative things, I was starting to rattle on there about the Paul McCartney portrait. So Paul McCartney portrait, I love doing the Nicky so much that a couple of years later I thought, Paul McCartney's going to turn 80. If I want to do something to celebrate his life, he is a member of my family, I think. I did a huge portrait of Paul, and the whole crux of the piece was that he's the most prolific writer of songs, love songs, that this country produced. So I depicted him doing that heart symbol, you know, that people do with their fingers. In this jacket, and I was going to cover the jacket psychedelic style with hearts. So I'm like, right, well, I'm not ever going to have enough hearts because this piece of work's bloody huge. So I put it out there to all Beatles fans via Instagram and my other one and Twitter, and I'm on Facebook as well, and saying, like, will you send me a heart? If you send me a heart, I'll send you a little card back. a little card of the drawing of Paul. So I thought, once again, no one's going to bother with this. And then I got about like 70 or 80. But these are like from all over the world. So whilst like Instagram, you know, is sometimes a bit hit and miss, it's bloody great for that and connecting people. You know, I was getting hearts sent from Australia and, you know, the most far-flung places in the world. It was crazy. It cost me a fortune in postage to send the card back. But it doesn't matter. And now, you know, the piece is done and it looks, it's my favourite piece that I've ever done. It's my absolute favourite. So it's...
It is an amazing piece.
It's about like and it's about nearly a metre by a metre. It's massive. It's great.
And it's so full of love. And I think that the love is comes through on, like, all of your pictures are full of love, though. I mean, that's one of the things, you can't not smile when you see the portrait.
Oh, that's nice. That's a good compliment. I'll keep that one. Don't know when the next one's coming. So I'm really pleased anyway, because that portrait's got in the New Light exhibition. So the New Light exhibition, the prize exhibition, is only for artists in the north of England, all the way from Liverpool across to, like, the northeast. And I've been after this competition for years. I've entered it for years and years and years, and I almost enter it just for a bit of a laugh now, just to kind of, let's throw £20 down the drain. But this time they've accepted it, and it starts off in Birkenhead, tours to London, goes to Harrogate, to the Biscuit Factory here in Newcastle. So I'm pleased as punch. And also, I need to get it out of the house because it's big and we haven't got anywhere to put it.
Yeah, I wondered whether you were going to, you know, I always wonder if, like, people like Henry Moore, I mean, obviously he's probably got his own studio, but, you know, people who do like massive sculptures and they're like, there's an artist who she would do like life-size bears. I've got like six bears in my lounge now. Where am I going to
put
those?
I would be asking, so, how big is your loft hatch?
Well, indeed, just imagine that. And then one day the grandkids go upstairs and your loft's filled with these bears all covered in like cobwebs.
All rotting away.
That'd be amazing. Tell me about your sewing machine. Are you still using the same sewing machine you started
with? Yeah, I am. So this sewing machine is, it's called Singer Fashion Mate from like the 1960s. And on it, it's got a logo of like a little special 1960s lady making a curtain or something. So I bought, I bought this from a market in Newcastle in 1993. Which is now demolished, and it was 50 quid, and it's the last sort of like cast iron, cast metal machine that Singer made, so it weighs a frigging ton. So whenever I get it serviced, it's like, to try and get it into the car. And then probably I've been using it for about 20 years, and then suddenly like, bang, that was it. And all the lights went out in the house. And I thought, oh, shite, what's going on here?
Wow.
And then re-plugged it in, bang, same again. So I took it to this little old man that I've got that fixes it. And he said it wasn't earthed. I know. So I could have like killed myself. Never mind like the house lights going out. Anyway, so he's earthed it for me, thank God. And I've been using it ever since. Because, right, it's fixable. It's quite slow, which is good if you're doing meticulous things. All I've got is forwards, backwards, and a zigzag stitch. The foot is fixed. Somebody asked me, oh, you must do free motion, like, you know, embroidery on the machine. I said, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't even know what that is. Like, what is it? Before you put a different foot, I was like, I don't even know what that is. So I just use the fixed foot and go really slowly. And I can't imagine using another machine because it's not broken, is it? And also, this machine's been knocking about for so long. I mean, what would I have been then? Like 2020 or something when I bought it? 22? I don't know. I can't do the math. And it's like, that is like part of the furniture in our house. It's been in every house that I've ever moved to. And it's really weird. I don't know if you've got a favourite machine, but it's like people start to have like a bit of a relationship with their sewing machine. It's like they feel really sentimental about it. So sometimes when I put pictures of it online, someone will say, oh, something like, oh, my God, and get really sentimental and say, oh, my mum had that machine and I remember her making this on it and that on it. Isn't that weird? And like, even if they can't use it, they don't want to throw out their mother's machine or something. So
they're quite prominent, aren't they? Because you can't really, like, if someone's a regular sewer, then the thing would be out all the time, wouldn't it? So it is a very, like, visible, mm-hmm. quite big piece of machinery in the world.
Especially if it weighs that. But, yeah.
Yeah, I used to have I think I bought it for Mary, a Montgomery Ward sewing machine that I called Dolores. And it came with, like, a built-in table. But it was, like, blue and silver, almost like a bit like a Cadillac style thing. I think that was what I liked about it the most. And in the end, we had to kind of give it on to a good home because we were carting it around. But I mean, some of those machines are just epic. And I think that's it. The one that you've got, it's almost like I say, made out of metal, built in obsolescence, not really being a thing at that point. So you know it's kind of going to run forever.
Yeah, that's right. That's very true. But I think it's weird as well, because like when I'm doing portraits of people, I think it's like 1967 to 69. But it's like I did a whole set of four portraits of the Beatles in 1967, where they all had the same formatted shaped jacket. But all I did was change the jacket and obviously the Beatles. So it gave this impression that they were like brothers, you know, because they were all the same. But it was specifically from 1967. I thought, isn't that weird? Because I'm sewing them on a machine that is from the era that I'm doing the portrait of. Mad. Paul McCartney's aged. The machine's still the same.
Was it different when you had to do a portrait of Dave, who's like a real human that you know and love very much? You did a recent portrait of him, right, with his mum.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what it is. Like, I like to torture myself by entering these, like, needlework competitions. And if, like I was saying before, if you put a portrait of, Mick Jagger in, they will not take it seriously because they just assume that you've copied it from a photograph and it's classed as fan art. So I thought, right, I'm going to do a piece specifically for a competition. So I chose a picture of Dave, my husband, and he's quite an interesting, snappy dresser. So I thought this would be a good opportunity for me to like use some like different fabrics and materials in his hat and his shirt and stuff like that. And I thought I've got to make it a bit more interesting here because I've got to show my needleworking, my sewing skills. So Dave was adopted when he was a baby by his mom, Marjorie, and Marjorie was in the Salvation Army. And we've got a beautiful picture of her in the house in a Salvation Army bonnet. And I thought it was an interesting concept of salvation, adopting a baby and her being in the Salvation Army. But what was even better was I could do him in colour because he's alive and well and current. But the picture is old and she's passed on now. So I could do the picture in monochrome. So that was an interesting, thing to do. Also, his arms are quite colourfully tattooed, so that was a good opportunity to, like, use my needlework skill, using different kind of threads and stuff to make the tattoos. And then to, like, really, like, pin it more to the subject, I cut up Dave's clothes.
With his permission.
Yeah, no, not actually, no. Because it's a smaller scale than him in real life, I needed a smaller pattern. So I cut up his boxer shorts because I needed a small check for his shirt. So that's all right. He's got loads. And then I used some, like, different materials from his clothes to make his hat and whatnot. Was it different doing him? No, it wasn't, because I don't see Shane McGowan as a rock star. I see him as a man and an interesting round, an interesting character. And because I'm a portrait artist, I have drawn and sewn thousands of eyes and thousands of mouths and teeth, and everyone is different. So if I'm doing an eye, it doesn't make any difference if it's Ian Dury's eye or Dave's eye. I've just got to get it right. But I really enjoyed it as well, because it was good to be able to take a picture of him holding himself. But no, I don't see it as vastly different. Really, no. Because if somebody asked me to do a portrait of their wife, maybe their wife is just as important as Grace Jones to them.
Yeah. Have you got any, like, tips for people about portraiture? Like, what are there any fundamentals you've learned along the way?
The fundamentals are, if you're going to do a portrait of someone, try and maybe get a photograph of them where they're not showing their teeth, because teeth are really difficult to do. and everyone's got a unique set of like teeth. And if you get one wrong, it just looks really weird. So like try and if it just looks weird. It just looks weird. Someone can look like really goofy or really like sallow chinned if you get the teeth wrong. So I would say avoid teeth. Like always start with the eyes, because if you do the rest of the face and then you do the eyes last and you bugger that up, it's gone. It's over. So if you do the eyes first, in general, you could probably recognize some of my pieces of work just from the eyes. So once you've done the eyes, if you've done them well, you're on a roll. So that's what I would say. I don't know. I mean, I like adding things that add to like the narrative of the person and adds to the story of them, because I think it's a more interesting portrait. So I don't know. So someone like, if I'm doing like Robert Smith from The Cure, like to me, he's like Halloween-y. You know, he just always, when I was a kid, I was fascinated by him because he reminded me of spiders, Halloween. He's very like Tim Burton. So that, he's like a little weird demonic character. So that's how I wanted to portray him. So instead of doing hair, I use spiders. So I've machined his face and I've given him a shirt that is orange and black striped, which is, you know, your traditional Halloween colours. And then his hair, from afar, just looks like his crazy backcombed hair. But when you get close, it's all made up of plastic Halloween spiders that you would get in like party packs and stuff. So that would be my advice to someone. Try and make it interesting. Try and find out a bit about the person. If they like nature, maybe portray them in flowers or wearing flowers, for example.
I was quite taken by your John Lydon portrait, the one with the yellow background.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was quite minimal, I thought. And that was what was interesting.
Well, after I was starting to do, like, most of my pictures are about 12 by 16. And that includes maybe their head and shoulder, you know, their shoulders, like part of their clothes. And then I had a scheme. I thought, well, I think I'm just going to do some with the face, because I was starting to like rely on the money from this. And I thought I can knock them out a bit quicker if I just do a facial study. So that was the first one that I did. So I just merely did his face and I just did a collar. So that was the point of that. And it does look good and it does work because it's on a bright yellow background and you already associate him with yellow because of the, never mind the bollocks. We might have to blank that. Because of the Nevermind the Bollocks album cover. So they're already kind of, I already associate him with yellow. And then, you know, just by like using tiny little subtle pieces of tartan. And then like, I like to like make little badges and things.
¿Buscas las ofertas de Early Black Friday en Lowe's? ¡Estás justo a tiempo! Ahorra hasta 50% en electrodomésticos selectos y hasta 25% extra en combos de electrodomésticos selectos. ¿Estás pensando ya en poner luces navideñas? Aprovecha ahorros de hasta 50% en escaleras selectas. Precios de Black Friday sin las filas de Black Friday. Lowe's. Nosotros ayudamos. Tú ahorras. Válido hasta el 11-19. Selección varía por tienda. Solo en tiendas selectas hasta agotar existencias. Detalles en Lowe's.com.
Like that. So I made a few like little Sex Pistols badges and a few like safety pins on him, but that seemed to be enough. And then I did quite a lot of them because I like the success of it. I thought it looked good, and there's something about because it's right in the middle of the canvas and it's surrounded by color, it's quite impactful. Is that a word?
Definitely. And it's one of those things in a way where it allows you to fill in the
gaps. That's it. Exactly. Sometimes it's good to have like more space around a piece. So because I've got a tendency to like try and fill every single little bit of space. So I'm trying to teach myself.
So can we talk about, because you talked about a little bit, like the layers of how your business works?
Sure.
It's quite interesting because you've got, you make your pieces. You've got a fairly successful Etsy store, I think.
Yeah, my Etsy store's good. So, like, the whole ethos of what I think about art, you know that I don't like pretension in art. So I will sell the original. So some of my work is commissions where people ask me to do a portrait of someone. And the other half of my work are just people that I want to do and I hope that they'll sell. And if I don't, I really love them, so I just put them on my wall. Even by selling the originals, I can price them at what I think, but I'm really keen on selling to fans because I know that they really love that picture. So if they want to pay me £50 a month, that's absolutely fine. I'm bang up for that. And if they miss a month because they need their bike fixing, that's also good. That's fine. I don't mind. I would rather people just had the work, and I would rather that work was affordable than turn people off. Then, so for people that maybe don't have that amount of money or the original's gone, I sell like the Giclée prints, the fine art prints.
Is that how you pronounce it?
I'm not sure. Giclée. Anyway, so I sell them, and they're really great quality, and they don't fade, and they're like museum quality prints. So I sell quite a lot of them from my Etsy store as well. And then another point is I sell greetings cards of the work, but they're really good quality greetings cards. So you can either like send them as a gift to a mate, or you can frame them up on your wall. It's just a smaller reproduction of my original. But I would rather, I think it's important that everybody can afford a piece of work.
And who are your, I don't know whether you can say this off the top of your head, who are your most popular Etsy subjects?
No, I can tell you that. So my most popular Etsy, weirdly, is the Sparks. Okay. It's more obscure people than what you'd think. The Sparks is very popular because I don't think there's a lot of memorabilia and merchandise around them. Robert Smith's very popular. I think it's maybe bands where they have kind of artsy sort of fans, or they're an artsy kind of band. Kate Bush is popular, and David Bowie is really popular. So the most popular David Bowie one I've done is where I portrayed him in a Japanese kimono.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
Yeah,
that
was, I really love that picture. I really love making it because I love David Bowie, and I love how he got really into the Japanese kabuki theatre, where gender roles change within it. And obviously he's like massively like experimented with his like gender representation as well. So I thought, right. And he was fascinated with Japan. So I portrayed him in a Japanese kimono, and it was made from an old Japanese washi paper book, which is like paper made from sort of like tree fibers or some strange like whatever, anyway, and it had like old calligraphy on it, and I folded it up almost like origami, and formed him a kimono out of that, trying to push the boundaries again of being seen as a textile artist. It's like, well, if I want to, I can sew him a kimono. So that's my most popular David Bowie print and card as well.
Are we allowed to ask if there are any that are really unpopular?
Bjork.
Which doesn't make sense. Yeah. That doesn't make sense, does it?
When you think Bjork's about the unpopular. Types. And Flea from the Chili Peppers. He's unpopular.
Okay.
He's very unpopular. Yeah, so.
Don't take it personally,
Yeah,
Flea,
don't take it personally. If you're listening. It's a nice portrait, but, you know, maybe.
He's a great guy.
Yeah.
Do you have any other crafty pursuits?
Because of my crafting background, I'm like a crochet nut. But what I love about crochet is it's so mad, you can just make it up as you go along. So if you asked me to follow a pattern, I wouldn't be able to do it. But if you said, make me a shoe, I could just do it. So that's what I like to do. So when I'm watching like telly or whatever on the night, I'm just constantly beavering on, like crocheting something. I've always got something on the go, but I'm not skilled at it, but I genuinely enjoy doing it.
What other makers do you admire?
Well, the good thing about Instagram is that you have got a community of textile artists. And I think that's great. And it's like they seem to be like, I will say largely female. I think textile artists are largely female. I'm not having a go. They seem like a totally non-bitchy group of birds, really. But one of my favourite is Teresa Burrows. Have you seen her work? She's also somebody that hardly has any Instagram followers. So she lives in Canada, and she does like traditional Canadian bead working. And it's like linked to sort of, you know, like those, do you call it first generation? I think you call it, I don't want to get the words wrong.
Let's say that.
Yeah. But, you know, like the native people's crafts. But what she does is extremely political and extremely feminist. And I tell you why I love her work, because I can't for the life of me work out how she does it. And she does it by hand. I'm really into people that make things by hand. Like, I can't stand this current influx of people talking about AI and digital. It really, like, I just think it's just soulless and awful. So if I see somebody making something by hand, I'm bang into them. But she's my absolute favorite artist on Instagram. Her work is phenomenal. You've got to check it out. Teresa Burrows. It's wonderful.
I'm literally looking at her now. She is artist underscore Teresa Burrows. She makes, she's
incredible.
Largely portraiture, but I mean, holy moly. The way she uses beads, depth,
and
texture,
stories behind
sort of
it, and the traditional stories behind it, and talking about women and Indigenous women's rights and deaths of Indigenous women and how they're not investigated by the police properly. And she does all this through beadwork. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, and I mean, you find that quite a lot, don't you? People are like, oh, beads, that must be lovely and safe and stuff. So it always does a double whammy when
I can't work out how she does it, and that intrigues me. And how wonderful that I can connect with her in Canada. And she really likes my work too. So that's the best thing about, like, Instagram and the internet, this, like, instant connection. But the main person when I was younger that influenced me was Kit Williams. I don't know if you remember him.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Masquerade.
So, yeah, Masquerade. So famous for painting a book. And in each page of the book was a puzzle. And within the puzzle would contain clues about how to find a golden hair. And what I loved about Kit Williams was he was a multi-skilled artist. So he was a jewelry maker making the golden hair. He was also a tailor. He was a painter. He did marquetry. He could do metalworking, silverworking. And he was absolutely crazy. It's like he would kind of turn up on something like Wogan or chat shows and he would just be absolutely off the wall nuts. He also had like an one eye that turned out to the left, like a, I would call it a boggly eye. I'm sure it's got when you were a kid, you think, God, that's fantastic. And it's like, we got his books out of Northampton County Library, you know, because you didn't just buy a book then. And we spent hours and hours looking at this book. And it's the first time when I looked at something, I thought, I want to do that. I want to be an artist. I'm going to do that. And I loved his sense of story, portraiture, mysticism. So last year, I thought, right, it's about time I said thank you to him. And I'm going to sew a portrait of him. So I sewed a portrait of him. And I'm trying to portray God, his wonderful mind spilling out and all his ideas. He's got crazy brown curly hair, crazy brown curly beard. So I sewed a sewed a portrait of him. And then within his hair and his beard, I sewed on, stitched on, stuck on a multitude of things that related to his work. His love of puzzles, hairs, jewels, all sorts of things to make a magical portrait of a man whose ideas just explode out of him. And get this, I thought, he's reclusive. So I found this weird website related to him and I messaged him and his wife messaged me back. I said, oh, hello. Just thought I'd let you know I'm doing a portrait of Kit Williams. Here's my drawing. She said, oh, that'd be nice. You'd like to see it when you finish it. So I sent him a picture of like my final piece and he emailed me back. And complimented me and said how it was wonderful that he'd influenced me and that my piece was full of whimsy and he loved it. And to me, that was like my childhood dream come true, from like being in Northampton County Library and looking at that book thinking, I'm going to do this, to later when I'm nearly 50, actually doing a portrait of him and emailing him. And he emails me back and says he likes it. That was just like, yeah, man, come on. So,
yeah. Obscure thing here. So I grew up in Bedfordshire and near where we lived up until about 6 years ago, there's a little town called Flitwick. And if you go down a road out of Flitwick, near somewhere, I think it's just a little farm. I can't remember if it was Pick Your Own or not. There's a hedge that's got a hare cut into it. And I think that's where we left the thing. So like, we've driven past that a few times.
Oh, how wonderful. Yeah. Because when he hid it, he put a cow pat on it.
Yeah, did he?
You can have that fact. That's yours.
To really throw people off the scent, quite literally.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story. Right, I'm going to come down to my four big questions now. The big, because we haven't had enough big questions. I think these are going to be quite hard in some ways. I'll start with an easy one. What's your favourite book? Have we already talked about it?
My favourite book? I haven't, have I? All right.
No, my I thought Masquerade was going to be up there, though.
Well, that is one of my favourite. My favourite book is called Golden Hands, Complete Book of Crafts. So I think Golden Hands was like a terrible 1970s craft magazine, maybe. But this book is about, like 3 inches thick. It's the book from my childhood that we used to do projects out of. And it's taught me so much. And I still look at it now and think, how do you make a corn dolly? And like have a look in it. And it's all contained in this book that I've been carrying around. But because the book is so thick, like I often use pressed flowers or pressed feathers, all sorts of things. So I grow a lot of plants and I think, that'll probably do for something in the future. So I press all my flowers in this book and it's held together with elastic bands. So, yeah.
Amazing. Slight weird fact. I did a show recently about endangered crafts and according to the Heritage Crafts Organization, corn dollies is... I think they're just endangered. I don't think it's critically endangered, but they're not as common as they need a bit of a revival. I think they're pretty sweet.
I think they're wonderful. They're great. There's somebody online that I bought a couple from, and they're so complicated. It's unbelievable. I've got one here in my studio that I look at. So yeah.
It's the original cornrows. Okay. Favorite film?
I think my favourite film, I've got a few, but I'll just pick one. So I love the film about Ian Dury called Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll. Because, number one, I love him. Two, Andy Serkis in it is just amazing. And three, you don't get many films that are father-son, that are about a father and son, really, because that's what it's about, him and Baxter Dury, ultimately, I think. And I love him. I love the music in it. The acting's great. It's fab. I've seen it about 14 times. I love it.
Awesome.
Okay. He's my hero.
And now the big one then. Favourite album?
Right. Well, this is easy, right? So my favourite album is the very first Beatles album, Please Please Me. And I'll tell you for why. So my parents were very old when they had me. So they're basically like from the war. So they were frugal people. So my dad wouldn't buy anything that was extra. So my mum carried around 5 albums with her from her youth, I guess. And it was things like South Pacific and Mario Lanza. And one of them was Please Please Me. Her brother used to work at EMI and he got her like a free copy. But we didn't have a record player. Right. So we didn't have a record player because my dad thought it was an extravagance because we only had 5 records. So all through when I was like little, I used to look at this album and I memorized the songs on it and I memorized who wrote the songs and their faces. And this is when I fell in love with Paul. Like I first saw out of the 4 of them gazing down off that building, he's the guy. Me, that's my guy. And then a couple of years later, remember when people could record an album onto a cassette? So I think my mum probably got someone to do that, and I thought I'd love to actually hear this album after having looking at it for years. And like, so you put the first song on and it's I Saw Her Standing There, but it starts with 1, 2, 3, 4. And it's like, wow. And from then on, I'm like, that's it. I'm a music fan. I'm a Beatles fan. These are my guys. And from then on, you learn about all sorts of other music through the Beatles.
Yeah, epic. The thing that always twists my melon, and I've said this plenty of times before, is the fact that what Please Please Me was March 63 and Let It Be was May 1970. So 7 years, 2 months, all the albums done and dusted. And you're like, what? Because it feels like they were forever, you know? It was like the Beatles must have been like 30 years, but they weren't. They were 7 years.
Oh, I just think they're wonderful. But are you a Beatles fan?
I've come to appreciate them over time because my parents were into them. And then we've got quite a few of the records on vinyl and I do quite like listening to them. I think Revolver might be my favourite. Because of, Let Forever Be, is it? That one that's like, it feels like a tipping point when they started getting really trippy on it. And then a little while ago, Mary and I went to Liverpool and we did like the Beatles tour and we went to the Cavern Club and that sort of stuff. And it's like the Beatles tour, I think, again, reinforced it because they grafted so hard. They worked so hard. It would be like album tour 6 months and then next album. Yeah. And we just, we don't have that pace anymore. So I admire them so much for that. And also going to the Cavern Club, which we weren't sure what it was going to be like. And there's a slight suspension of disbelief when you see the band. But I just loved so many people that were there were like having their best day of their lives because they were watching the BTS tribute band in the Cavern Club. Like it was so good. And I loved them. So I like, I really appreciate them. Slightly after the fact. Have you got a, so Please Please Me 100%. Do you have a second favourite album or are you stretching too far?
Second favourite album. Oh God. I mean, I could have like 4 billion albums.
This is wondered, I wondered whether we'd go that way.
I think my second favourite album, what's an album that I just play all the time? I'm a really big Led Zeppelin fan. Of like massive. If they're one of those few bands where I have every single one of their albums. So I would go Led Zeppelin 3.
Right.
Led Zeppelin 3. Yeah. That would be my favorite.
See, I'm not that Led Zeppelin familiar. I'll have
to. Oh, no, on Led Zeppelin. You're not a Led Zeppelinite. You should get into it. It's really great.
Yeah. I think what happened to me was one day in, when was it, like 1984, maybe something like that. One day I went into Woolworths in Bedford and I got 3 albums. I got the Batman soundtrack by Prince. I got Nana Cherry Raw Light Sushi.
Yeah.
So maybe it was a bit later than that. And then I got Guns N' Roses Appetite for Destruction and listened to the first two for quite a long time. And then one day I put Guns N' Roses on and it was a bit like that opening riff of Welcome to the Jungle. I was like, oh shit. All right, we're on a ride now. And that was it. I was like poodle rock for quite a long time.
Yeah. No, I just love Zeppelin. I absolutely love them. And I've done a portrait of Robert Plant and it was the most challenging hair I've ever done. I try and that was another top tip for your portrait people. Don't do someone with curly hair because it's a nightmare.
Right.
But yeah. Well,
but you compound yourself there because you don't, you're not a drop the feed dogs and do it. So you've got your own confines there, haven't you, in terms of your freedom of hairy movement, as it were.
I guess so. But if someone's got curly hair, you've just got to do curly hair, haven't you?
Yeah. No, 100%, 100%. So last question. What's the most interesting thing that nobody knows about you?
Bloody hell, I wasn't expecting that.
Oh, sorry. I should always send these in advance. But
okay. The most interesting thing that somebody doesn't know about me is... oh, shit. You should put this out.
Should have forewarned you.
Okay. If I can ride a unicycle.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That's. Well,
tell me about that.
I just set myself a challenge a few years ago and I thought I'm going to learn to do this. And it took ages and ages because I've always been quite jealous of, you know, when you see lads riding along, maybe smoking a fag and their hands are off the you know, and I thought, oh, God, how can they do that? And then I think somebody just lent me a unicycle and it took, oh God, like 6 months or something. And then finally I did it. I think at the time, this must have been a while ago now, my youngest daughter, who's now 19, she was learning to ride a bike. So I used to go out with her, like trying to learn her bike, and I was on the unicycle. So, yeah, I mean, that was then and this is now. Could I do it now? I'm not sure. Probably. Do you ever forget?
Yeah, I think not being able to ride a bike no-handed will be one of my regrets to my grave, kind of, you know. I always thought that probably the coolest thing I could do as a teenager would be to roll a rolly on a bike no-handed.
And do the caterpillar. That would be cool if you could do that.
People
that can just still do that.
Seeing into my brain.
You know, if they're really fat now and they can still bust it out, can't they?
Yeah, I mean, they can't walk afterwards. But there's that moment of glory. Crazy legs jump through hands. Amazing. If people want to find out about you, where do they go?
Right. So you can find me on Instagram at Stitching in the Kitchen.
No G.
Sorry?
No
G's. No G's. Right? Yeah, that's right. So a good way of finding out about me is on my website, which is www.janesanders.co.uk. And on there, it has all the links to my social media and my shop.
Yeah, and I swear to God, if people haven't discovered you on Instagram, they're missing out because it's a total treat.
Oh, thanks.
I've really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for having a needle exchange with me.
Same to you. Thank you.
Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time. Thanks for joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's NWDL.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needleexchange. See you next time.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.